Welcome to Moment by Moment, an Oak Hills Church podcast hosted by J.D. Mason, where each week he'll be joined by special guests to discuss modern topics and questions from a biblical perspective. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe wherever you're tuning in. Please like and review Moment by Moment wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love for you to share this episode with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe to be notified every time a new episode releases. Be sure to tune in next week as new episodes release every Monday.
Hello and welcome back to Moment by Moment. We are in the middle of season four. Man, we're so excited. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you to the subscribers. Thank you for everybody sharing, dropping comments, telling your family, your friends all about it. We are so excited about all the people that are listening in and, you know, sharing their thoughts and their feedback. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without you and your feedback and your sharing, man. We love you guys. Make sure you guys subscribe wherever you're listening to. Don't forget, we have new merch. I'm wearing some of it right now. Visit us on our website. Check out some of our new clothes, man. We would love for you to check out some of our new merch, because we're all about disciples making disciples, and this is a huge way that we can enter our community and our world with the hope of Jesus Christ. And so without further ado, I have some guests I want to introduce you to. We're going to be discussing dating in a modern world. With me, I have Julia, Ben, and Travis. I want you guys to just quickly introduce yourselves. Tell me how long you guys been here and what you do. Julia, you're up first. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. I have been here for now 90 days, probably 93 days.
Let's go, fresh. Let's get it.
I am the creative assistant here at Oak Hills Church, and I have loved every minute of it since I started.
Awesome. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right, so I joked about not doing math earlier, but I'm going to have to do some math right now. So I've been on staff at Oak Hills since, 12 years now, wow. A little over, almost 12 and a half. At the Crown Ridge campus since 2019 and since last summer as the care minister here.
Awesome.
Yeah. My name is Travis Eads. I am the lead minister here. Been the lead minister for almost 5 years now, but have been here for 10. Came here as a worship leader originally, and then campus minister, and now lead minister.
Well, hey, we're glad to have all you guys. Seriously, Travis, are you going to sing for us? That was one of the questions that somebody submitted in.
I think it would probably just be best if we just forego the song and we just move right on.
We're going to get into dating, man. I'm excited about this. This is a relevant conversation that, you know, from a Christian perspective, I think it's very important to have. We're getting a lot of perspectives from the world, so why not have a Christian perspective on this? And so if you're driving right now and you're listening, feel free to think about your questions and drop some comments later. We'd love to hear questions or even your thoughts that you agree, maybe disagree, but we're just going to go ahead and dive in with the definition from Merriam-Webster. All right, it says, so the definition of dating, to make a usually romantic social arrangement to meet with. All right, so that's their definition, but I want to get some of your perspectives. What is, like, when you think about dating, what is your guys' definition?
I mean, in my mind, dating is kind of that precursor to, like, engagement. Like, you're exclusive, you're becoming more exclusive, but you're hanging out a lot. And it's kind of that step right before engagement where it's like that step right before marriage.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, I'm not sure if this is the way everybody thinks, but I think to me, just like you said, it's kind of that step, it's that next step toward marriage kind of thing. So, I know to me, and the further along I've gotten in life, I've even more come to think of it as dating should be with a potential purpose in mind.
Okay.
I guess is a way to put it. You know, not just I'm bored, I think you're cute. You know, it's like, what is the end game here that is a potential life together kind of thing?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I guess just to add on to that, it is a step before marriage, but I also feel it's that little space where you get to know somebody, and if it's in the early stages of dating, you know, like, oh, is this going to work? Is it not? And then you can kind of make your decisions, I think, after those 3 months and see if it's worth marriage material after that.
Yeah. And hey, listen, we're not going to get into ages here, but we are from different generations. That's what we're going to say. All right. We're going to say we're all from different generations.
Yeah, high five, Gen X.
He's a boomer. But I was kidding. Travis is not a boomer. Well, maybe. Anyway, but no, we're... The reason, you know, I was really excited about this of having the different ages is because we all dated in different times. And we have apps now, right? We have dating apps. And, you know, Travis, for instance, did you guys have dating apps when you guys first started dating?
We didn't even have like cell phones when I was dating. We might have had the bag phone then.
Did you have electricity?
Google it. Yeah. So I've been married 25 years, just celebrated 25 years of marriage. So that just do the math there, Ben. It's been a while since I've dated. Yeah. We'll just say that.
And so, okay, knowing those things, dating looked a lot different for you guys than currently. So when we're talking about dating, I mean, we're talking about DMing people. We're talking about finding people in whole new ways that wasn't, you know, wasn't an option. And so I kind of want us to get into when you first started dating, what did it look like in your modern world context? Julie, I kind of want you to start because you're going to kind of give the perspective of you know, I was going to say kids now. You're not a kid, right? But I mean, yeah, I feel old when I say the youngsters, like they're on apps and things like that. Kind of walk us through, what does it look like in the modern world today? What apps are people using? Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what DM means? I mean, all those things.
Well, the term DM, direct message.
That helped out a lot of people. You'd actually be
I can personally say for myself, most of my dating experiences started with a DM or a slide in the DM as the term. And it's usually off of Instagram, Twitter. I don't think people use TikTok, but I've seen some people who have found their profiles and are like, I think you're cute. And, you know, or even Facebook, but that's like my older Gen Zers, close on the millennial cusp. But definitely I would say dating apps is a big one. I mean, you have all the popular ones, Tinder, Bumble. Hinge is now a popular one amongst Christians, which I didn't know, but a lot of my Christian lady friends are on Hinge and looking for their mans. And also I know there's the ring by spring. That's some of the popular terms that you hear. But yeah, definitely social media is a big one.
Okay. Ben, talk to me. Modern dating, what was the modern cutting edge way to date when you were first dating?
So cutting edge for me. So, you know, Travis mentioned earlier he's been married 25 or almost 25.
I have been married 25.
Okay, so we're coming up, my wife and I are coming up on 22. And so probably similar, you know, in the 90s was the last time I dated, and cutting edge was actually in person, seeing a person that you just meet with them or you get on the phone call with them, and, you know, not cell phone, you know.
And so not that, long distance, because that was expensive.
That's right. If you put a one in front of it, that was bad.
You really liked somebody if it was long distance.
Boy, I tell you. But anyways, yeah. So just, you know, my dating predated social media. You know, what's an app? That wasn't even in the lingo. I mean,
okay, here's a question then for both of you guys then. So with that being the cutting edge, quote unquote, were people against you being on phone calls then? So, you know, some people now would be like, well, you shouldn't meet somebody on social media, older generation, because they don't, you know, maybe they don't understand it. Were your parents' generation like, you should talk in person versus on the phone? Was there any thoughts like that?
I don't think so. It was more about, I think the key was you had seen this person in person at some point. You know, it wasn't just a cold call, you know, hey, here's a name of somebody that you might like. I mean, I don't think that ever happened. There was always at least one point of you had seen them, even if you hadn't talked to them a whole lot, you would at least.
That's interesting you mentioned cold calling. I mean, when you think about the way that you would DM somebody today, that's technically cold calling, like kinda. Shooting your shot is what we call it. Like when you're like, I find somebody attractive, I don't know them, I'm just gonna say, hey, you're beautiful, I'd love to take you out to coffee. That'd be really weird as a phone call though, right? I mean, even now that'd be weird. Like you just get a random phone call, it's like, yo, how'd you get my number? First of all, right? Creep.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, at that point it would have been a little creepy. And in fact, I think I thought about doing that one time. I liked this girl and I kind of wanted to call her just out of the blue. Yeah. And I think I just ended up staring at the phone for about an hour and just decided not to.
Right.
Yeah.
It would have been weird then.
Right. Because she would have been like, how did you get my number, man?
Everything. Yeah. Very in person, everything, very face to face.
Yeah.
I think for like my generation, as like a step before giving the phone number, it's here's my Snapchat or here's my Instagram. Yeah. And that's where you keep it until you like feel out the person. Like, are they safe? Do I vibe with them? Well, I had another question. Were pagers something? Like, what step was a pager involved with?
I'm thinking of some old songs that talked about beepers now.
Yeah, I didn't have one.
No.
I didn't have one either.
Yeah.
No, I skipped that part.
Yes.
So beepers were not a thing.
Not really.
Good to know.
No.
Maybe if you were a doctor.
That's all I can think of. Yeah.
Oh, it was, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, you know, we want to give a biblical perspective of this. And so, you know, dating, specifically that word, wasn't mentioned to my knowledge in the Bible. And so, you know, but there are definitely... there's definitely a standard, you know, that we can all agree upon from a biblical perspective. And from that standard, I think is obviously sex before marriage is frowned upon and from a biblical perspective. So all of us, when we're discussing this, I'm not saying that we haven't made mistakes in our past, but just saying that is the standard that we're talking about. But I do kind of want to walk us into in view of a biblical standard. Some people do struggle with feeling like that's a line. You know, I've heard people say, well, this is like test driving, you know? And so I want to kind of, let's press into some of those things with the boundaries. So as we, moving into this boundary conversation, Trav, I'm going to kind of lean on you to set us up with when you think boundaries from a biblical perspective, what are those boundaries? Are they gray? Are they, is it black and white? Is it up to you? Is it up to different generations? Do they change? What is your perspective on that?
I think the place that I would start is kind of beginning with the end in mind. So we've already kind of shown our cards that we believe that dating is a precursor to marriage. That's the way that I look at that. So you're right, JD, that the Bible doesn't talk a lot about dating, but it talks a lot about marriage. Mm-hmm. The Apostle Paul, he addresses marriage. And so in Ephesians 5, I believe it is, mm-hmm. he actually talks about husbands loving your wives as Christ loved the church. Right. And then he goes on to say, husbands, you should love your wives as you love yourself. Mm-hmm. Husbands, you should love your wives as you love your own body. And he kind of goes through this list like, okay, Paul, we get it. And then he goes on to talk about marriage. And he says it's actually a deep mystery. Mm-hmm. A deep mystery. But then he goes on to explain what that mystery is. And he says that basically we've been given the union of marriage to help us understand the union between Christ and the church. So he keeps coming back to this whole thing over and over and over about how these relationships, especially the marriage relationship, is really representing this union of Christ and the church. Well, you start to think about husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. Well, how did Christ love? Mm-hmm. So love, that's one of those conversations, you know, we've got a lot of different ideas about that in our culture. But when you talk about Christ's love, that's a very specific, what we call agape love. And that is where you have the welfare of the other person in mind above mm-hmm. your own. So it's a very specific love. And it's not just theoretical. In the life of Christ, we watched him live this out, led him all the way to a cross where he literally laid down his life for other people. So you want to talk about like standards, like that's where we begin. That is the standard, the way that he was in relationship with other people. And Paul's saying, guys, as you're considering marriage, as you're, you know, the man and the woman, leave mom and dad and they become one. You know, that was the mystery, right? It's like, whoa, what is he talking about? I mean, you can imagine the first time this comes up is like Genesis 2:24. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a mystery then, but Paul's saying, hey guys, that mystery has now been revealed. Yeah. Like all of that, all of this relationship and why it's so important is because it's actually pointing to Christ and the church. And Christ loved the church. He gave his life for the church. So to me, that's where I start. And then I kind of work backwards. And I think a lot of the questions that we have about the period of engagement, the period of dating, the period of, I don't know, what comes before that? Hanging
talking.
Out?
Talking.
Okay,
talking.
There you go.
Kicking it.
I just think it comes back to that agape love. And I heard the question like this. What does love require of me? Which I think is a fantastic question for any situation in life. But we're specifically talking about relationships and specifically talking about dating. What does love require of me? Well, it requires of me to put aside my own desires, my own gratification, and being ready to date or being ready to move forward in a relationship means that I am ready to put those things aside mm-hmm. and seek out the welfare of that other person more than I do on my own. So I think that's one place in the Bible. That's a real anchor right there. Ephesians 5 is a real anchor that we can go back and we can look, even though, as we've talked about, dating has changed a lot, mm-hmm. but the principle is still the same and that agape love is still the same.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of things like boundary, so one of the little context here is one of the hats I get to wear here at Oak Hills Church is walking with people in premarital counseling. Okay, right. So I do come in contact with a lot of people. I almost called them kids. I'm sorry. I called them kids, 20 somethings or whatever. You know, they're kids to me. But I get to walk with them in this process, and one of the things that I do discover is that. A lot of people enter into a dating relationship and then into an engagement even sometimes, and including believers, and they just haven't even taken the time to ponder the concept of purpose of this thing, right. of boundary, of the why, all that stuff. And they've allowed themselves to almost mindlessly walk into these relationships. I mean, just because, there was an attraction at some point. or there was, you know, whatever it was. Mainly, attraction is a great way to put it. But then they never got any deeper than that. And time happens and things happen, and they have not done the intentional work of the purpose of why they're together. They have not done the intentional work of looking at scripture and looking at the role of a marriage and husbands, wives, those things. And as a result, they make some decisions. They have not put a boundary in place. They've make some decisions that make sense maybe to the world or because all their friends did a certain thing. And that's something that, you know, I see increasingly happening. So the idea of a boundary, in some ways, I don't know if it's foreign as much as a lot of people just don't even think about it. You know, they just do what makes sense, you know, logically, worldly. So when you look at scripture, you're right. It's hard to, there's a few things you've mentioned, a few, you know, you've talked through some guidelines and ideals, that seem like a hard and fast. But sometimes you just have to be able to look at yourselves and go, okay, there are some hardline boundaries, but then maybe what is the wise choice to back off even more in the name of looking to the other, in the name of not just feeding my own wants and desires. And so, like I said, for too many couples, they haven't even thought about that. They've not done the work.
If you want to present yourself holy and blameless, things like that, then what does it take to do that? Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Julie, when you consider boundaries in this modern era? I think that I can say, I think the younger generations have more of a gray area than before.
Oh, yeah. I think definitely the new age thing is whatever is good to you, then that's fine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's all based... It's a personal thing. It's very, what works for you may not work for everybody else, and that's fine for you. And I think a big thing when it comes to setting boundaries with relationships is taking note of, are we unequally yoked? And that goes beyond just our faith. It goes into our morals, our backgrounds, our finances. And if the couple is willing to meet in the middle and move towards the next step. But I know, like, personally in my own life, in my dating history, when it came to setting boundaries, I kind of just did what I, like, okay, the Bible says this, but I want to do this. So how can I make it work? Mm. And then obviously, like, over time you learn and that they're put there for a reason. And now I'm so thankful having the experiences I've had, because in my next relationship, I have the proper boundaries of how can I preserve my heart, but also the other person's heart, because that's what the Bible also calls us to do, is to guard our hearts.
Yeah.
And I mean, you have to be vulnerable in a marriage, but before that step is how can we both set each other up for success spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and be mindful of the other person.
Yeah, you know, and I think my generation came through the purity culture, and you know, a lot of people got burned by it, because they touted being holy and not having sex or not doing anything, right? And then, but they never talked about what happens when you do it. You felt like you were a discarded Christian. You felt like you were a second tier Christian. You felt like you are you even a Christian? And so, I think a lot of my generation, the millennials, we fought hard against that purity culture because we knew how much damage it could do to people because there was no conversation on restoration. It was all about what you don't do. Don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And what happens, you know, when you're a kid, somebody
curious.
Says, don't touch the stove. Yeah. I got to do it at least one time, you know, that kind of hurt.
Yeah. I think you're onto something, JD. I actually, getting ready for today, you know, I actually consulted with some of our interns and walked through some of this with them. And what you said right there about, maybe some of the reaction that younger generations are having against, I think, a well-meaning thing like a purity culture or whatever. That's some maybe the inadvertent thing was an example given to me was that you've got two people who are dating. They're maybe heading toward marriage. And once they start to, even if they themselves in their relationship are pursuing a godly relationship, if there was a history... that there are examples of once that history is discovered with one or other of the member of the couple, almost a view of that person as lesser than, or, and if our theology is that, no, you can be restored, you can be made new, then do you believe it or not? You know, and that inadvertently some of that culture, it worked against that reality because you were seen as damaged goods or broken, even if you had been redeemed and made new, and people just couldn't move past it.
Yeah.
You know, that sense of guilt and
I do want to add, I remember being told in youth group a lot, don't awaken love before it's time. And at like 14 years old, you're like, I don't even know what love is.
Yeah.
And but then no one gave you any context as to, well, what type of love are you talking about? Or what are the guidelines? So just don't awaken love before time and don't have sex before marriage.
Yeah.
And if you do, here's all the shame with it. And it's like, but I'm human. Where's the grace? Mm-hmm. Where's the understanding? You should be teaching me what is love. And my little tidbit.
I mean, there are definitely different types of love. You know, there's that Eros love, you know, and juxtapose that against agape. You know, that's completely different, you know? Yeah. And so there are loves that we should have and there are loves we shouldn't have before it's time. But not explaining those things. I mean, it's odd that we're talking about purity culture in a negative way, right? You'd think like, this is always going to be a good thing. Right. There's no negatives. But now my generation, we're burned. And so when people mention purity, it's almost like, I'm offended because I'm thinking of all the negative connotations and I think of no grace. I think of, you know, no restoration. And so knowing that people who are listening right now, there might be in a relationship or have been in a relationship, to your point, been of having a history. Mm-hmm. And they feel like, you know what? I'm now unequally yoked with any Christian because I have history, you know, or because I'm still struggling with this. Travis, I mean, can you speak to that? And Ben, you know, and like, can you guys speak to somebody who has a history and is struggling with feeling like I've already failed, you know? Mm-hmm. I can never get right again. Like, I can never be back right, or I'm always going to be unequally yoked. Because I think we've talked about unequally yoked in a negative way, too, without explanation. And can you ever get back? It's like, once you have that label, you're forever unequally yoked. Mm.
I think it goes back to the standard of Christ because, you know, Julia, to your point, you can't control what someone else is going to think. Or what category they're going to want to put you in. So really the solid ground, the bedrock, is to go back to what Christ says. And more so than what he said, what he did. So we believe is that when he died on the cross, he was punished for our wrongdoing, that's been dealt with. And so I think you have to go back there and remind yourself. Because, you know, I talk to a lot of people who will just flat out ask me, maybe they've had a negative consequence in their life, or maybe just something, you know, just didn't go the way that they wanted it to. Their question is God punishing me for that? Mm-hmm. And I have to remind them, Jesus was punished once and for all. So let that thought out of your mind. You're no longer being punished. Now, is there consequences in life or decisions that we make? Yes, but I think when it comes to worth and purity, because the thing about purity is really if it's all about me and what's good for me and what gratifies me, then what is the point of purity? See, purity doesn't make any sense unless you're being called to be pure and holy for God, or like we talked about, that being purity being a loving act to another person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we usually ask the question, well, what does purity mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
We rarely go that next step and ask the question, well, what does it matter if I'm pure? What does it matter to that other person? And what does it matter to the God who created me? So we really have to get outside of ourselves for the conversation around purity to really make any sense. We've got to want that to be true before we can really have a conversation about what is true.
Yeah. So that standard that we're holding ourselves to is not something that's in and of ourselves. It's just the same as morality. And to your point, I mean, that is what the younger generation is saying. They're saying your morals are different than mine. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can call something immoral says that you do have some cognizant understanding of there's something that I'm working towards, even when you say it's my own. There's something in your underlying subconsciousness, and it's kind of what C.S. Lewis points to, that we all have a standard of morality that transcends our beliefs, our own personal beliefs, because the fact that we want to attain to something, even if it's different levels, speaks to the fact that there is some cognizant understanding that there's something we want to get to. Your level is different than mine, but the fact that we're all talking about a level, that says a lot. Mm-hmm. So, Ben, when you think about restoring somebody who is feeling like less than, I mean, I know you do counseling and things like that. Could you kind of speak to that person who's listening right now, maybe feeling some of that burn?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's real to that person, you know, so you don't diminish it, you know,
right.
If they're feeling something, you're not saying, oh, you're right. You're just acknowledging like, hey, this is real. And, when you're walking through this idea of restoration, you just really, I mean, I love how you pointed to Christ. I mean, obviously that's great. That's absolutely primary. But then really, you need to get them to believe that what Jesus says about me and what Jesus says about the work that's been done is true. So, you know, to piggyback a little bit off of something Travis was talking about, even the concept of like forgiveness. Okay. Right. So, you know, often we pray and ask God for forgiveness, and I think that's great. But if I the way I read scripture is that you've already been forgiven.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So embracing that. So having, you know, really walking with them to say, embrace that you are forgiven. But then, if it involves a couple, let's say, and there's a struggle there, you know, I've walked with some couples where, there is this imbalance, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And one member of the couple is, you know, whether it's they have a history or whether they've experienced some things, they made some choices, maybe while they were a believer, maybe pre-belief. And then the other member of the couple is struggling with that. Okay.
Real quick, could you give us some of those choices? I mean, just could you name some of those things for the listeners?
Well, I mean, it could be, sexual choices, you know, in the past, other relationships. It could be struggles. It could be, I'm thinking of an example right now that I'm aware of that involved a struggle looking at inappropriate websites and mm-hmm. pornography and stuff like that. And there was a disappointment in that past struggle mm-hmm. from one member of the couple. And so part of it is not just yourself, the one who has the history of the past, coming to terms with, I am forgiven.
Right.
I have been restored. It's, you know, it's an ongoing thing, but it's a past tense thing as well. And coming to terms with that, I think that helps people feel free to embrace the new creation they are.
Right.
They don't have to be a slave to that. But then if there's a member of the couple that struggles with that, because that is not their history,
right.
They can't even imagine doing some of these things.
Yeah.
You've got to walk with them and also say, listen, we're trying to share these truths with this one person who's struggling with their past and their decisions. You've got to believe that too for them.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. You've got to believe that this person that you loved, you care for, has been forgiven, has been restored. Mm-hmm. And they need to choose also to look at that person not as damaged goods,
right.
yeah.
But as a new creation in Christ as well. And once that starts to happen, that's when the healing between the two of them can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. That's where my mind goes
right.
when we talk about right. this. Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting. I think about the restoration of David, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he went on the roof looking. Some would say, like, he was looking at porn in a sense, right? And then acted on it and then was restored. Now there is punishment there, mm-hmm. right? So it's not that we're saying, you know, you're dodging all punishment because you've already been forgiven, but we're saying there's grace and there's restoration for you if you mm-hmm. turn from it.
Yeah.
I think about, I mean, Paul didn't necessarily struggle with this particularly, but Paul killed Christians. I mean, that's pretty egregious.
Yeah.
And then was mm-hmm. definitely restored. And so I think that you have to remember the Bible, I mean, it was written for us to understand that there is restoration for us. That's why we have these examples.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're feeling like, you know, maybe you've heard it preached and you're feeling guilty and you feel like, you know, I can't date a Christian because, you know, I'm unworthy. That's what I've heard some people in my experience. They felt like they were just less than, mm-hmm. literally second-class citizens in a sense to other Christians. And
mm-hmm.
I've, you know, and some of these biblical examples I think are there for a reason. They're to remind people that, listen, no, you're already forgiven. You're rooted, if your identity is in Christ, it's not in what your sin is. You are not your sin.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that we love people and hate the sin for other things, I mean, that is, you're rooted in Christ. And when your identity is rooted in Christ, then people, if somebody judges you, the Bible talks about that too.
Yeah.
So it kind of walks us into toxic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What are some things that you've noticed in toxic relationships? This is just for people who maybe are asking their, you know, maybe they're like, I feel like I have some traits in my relationship that are toxic. What would you say are some of those?
Well, I mean, right off the bat, you know, the big red flag, of course, is any sort of abusive type of thing.
Right.
You know, I think all of us would agree. Toxic.
What are the different types? I mean, break them down for us.
Well, you got emotional abuse,
okay.
you know, so making someone feel less than or domineered. So anything domineering, that was a word I was going to use after the abuse. But, you know, a domineering sense, you know, if someone feels like they don't have a voice, mm-hmm. they're just being held under somebody's thumb, you know, so that kind of thing. Obviously physical abuse, any sort of when someone gets hands laid on them in any form or fashion, right. I think that that's obviously ding, ding, get out,
yep.
get help, yeah. you know, all those things. But I think when you're thinking of a toxic relationship also, I mean, as I mentioned the domineering personality, I think that's a danger. Mm. I think anytime if there's a member of a couple or both of them and they're not willing, you know, there is no evidence that they're out to serve the other. They are out to be a student of the other person. Mm. Yeah. And it's all about me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a dating relationship right now and either you yourself or the other is viewing this relationship as it's all about completing me or serving right. me or making me happy. Thank you. Yes. That's red flag. You know, that is not the purpose and that is not healthy. And that's not going to end well.
Right.
Yeah.
I think something to note as well, when you're in a relationship and you go through struggles, you go through hard times, you have to come at it from a place of trying to understand the other person rather than being understood. Mm. And I think that's sometimes where it can get toxic, is one partner will choose to, no, you need to understand my perspective and where I stand on things, and I'm not going to budge or do it my way. And you're like, hold on, but are you even trying to understand me? Or like you said, be a student mm-hmm. to me. There's just something that could play into being toxic, as well as mental abuse, as well as a very, very real thing. The mind games that some people can play, whether they have their own unresolved trauma and now you are becoming their punching bag. Mm-hmm. You got to notice the signs of like, hey, this isn't healthy. And I think we need to take a step back and analyze, do we continue on this path together mm-hmm. or just choose to I'm going to let you heal. And then I'm going to go heal as well from mm-hmm. all of that as well.
Yeah.
Well, these guys covered it pretty good. The right. only thing that I would add is maybe the tendency to just not be vulnerable in a relationship, mm-hmm. meaning to conceal, to conceal emotions, or to conceal just basically to not be truthful. So that's really toxic and devastating to relationship, because it will eventually work its way to the surface. Oh, yeah. And when it does, it can potentially do a lot of harm. Mm-hmm. So I would say a toxic tendency would be to just harbor that and to not share that.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I will say just came to mind right now is under the notion of like, well, you have to love everyone and forgive everyone. At a certain line, you have to draw.
100%.
Like you can't keep making excuses. If someone's hurting you or making you feel unworthy, then I have to draw the line with this. And yes, the Bible calls me to love, but I am loving you enough to say I have to step away and I have to love myself and can't do it.
One other one that I think that I've heard a couple discuss is whenever somebody says, if you leave me, I'm going to do this. And it's something drastic. I think it's part of the mental abuse. It is manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're manipulating you to feel guilty because you'd feel the pressure of what they would do. And they claim like, I've heard it said some extreme things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that person stays because like, well, I have to stay or they'll do this to themselves. Mm-hmm. That is it's a manipulation. And I think that's definitely a form of abuse, because somebody could stay for years feeling some type of pressure and responsibility for the other person's well-being. And ultimately, it's a selfish thing for that person.
Yeah. You can't make excuses for their bad behavior.
Right.
Though you can empathize with them.
Right.
But you don't justify it. And if they were saying, I'm going to do this because if you leave me, I didn't make you do anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're choosing to do that.
And Ben, question for you. At what point is something toxic to leave? And then is there a toxic to get counseling? Mm-hmm. Is there a gray area in there?
Oh, wow. So to leave, well, a lot of these big abuses.
Right.
Okay. That's a leave. I'd say counseling. You know, when I was thinking a second ago while we were talking, the whole be a student, if there's there might be an unwillingness to try to learn, how do I learn about myself? How do I learn about my significant other? If there's a willingness, though, for growth, if there's a willingness to say, you know, think of it as personality types or, you know, Enneagram or love languages or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If one person's here and one person is here and they're struggling, and there's a willingness at least to say, I need to take a couple steps this way and you can take a couple steps this way. We don't know how to get there. I think that's a great example of like, okay, counseling I think can help. Seeking wisdom, seeking wise counsel, whether it's with a therapist, whether it's with a class or a group or just a mentor or couple, those kind of things, that's a great example of like the counseling is viable here. But if one or the other is like, no, this is me, deal with it. I am not going to move. You can come all the way over to my way.
Right.
My way or the highway.
You know, that's time where I'm like, I don't even know if counseling necessarily, that person's not ready yet. Now, maybe they experience some healing.
Right.
Down the line.
Yeah.
But similar to what you said is like, you know, right now we need to work on each other. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a time to say, all right, we need to hit pause big time.
Yeah.
Okay. Or just end it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you realize it too late and you're already married, oh, oops. Well, mm-hmm. now you got to go through it together. But
yeah,
I see that in a lot of my relationships within my family members. I see my aunts and my uncles who you can clearly see they're unhappy, but it was a marriage out of convenience, or it was a marriage out of we're young, we need to get married, or whatever, and now they're dealing with it. And if you would have noticed the things before, and would you have gotten married? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, but they didn't do the work. Yeah,
exactly.
And they didn't even think about it, because I do see a lot of that too. Is people who they end up married after they've been dating, and they just feel like, I guess this is just the next step.
Yeah.
We've been dating this long, and then I guess we need to get engaged because that's what we do.
So don't marry out of convenience is what we're saying.
Don't settle. Know your worth.
Or for money. I've heard people doing it for money, for tax breaks and things like that.
Yeah. Or insurance.
Yeah.
Or
real quick, I do want to lighten this up a little bit. So Travis, question for you. Do you believe in the mythological The One?
The One.
The One. There's only one. One and only.
No, I don't.
Man, you just broke so many hearts.
Sorry.
Those childhood
romantic.
Yeah. Talk to us. What do you why do you say that?
Now, you mentioned do the work, Ben. Mm-hmm. You said do the work. I think part of doing the work is, well, first of all, having other wise mentors around you. Let's just say this is not for anyone to just figure out on their own. Mm-hmm. You need that outside perspective to help you. Healthy voices, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Let's just,
because you could just be attracted to them, so all that goes out the window for you.
Oh, my
That's why
goodness.
I like that. Have an outside counsel.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So I have had an opportunity to do premarital counseling, and so I've met with a lot of young couples that were very in love, ready to get married, and I could just see the rose-colored glasses. Because part of the work is asking the questions, well, how compatible are we? You know, we use that biblical phrase, being equally yoked, but really that's just a way of saying how compatible, similar are your experiences in life, and how compatible are you in what you want out of life?
Yeah.
How were you raised? How do you want to raise your children? Mm-hmm. How are you raised to spend and think about money? How are they raised to think about money?
Yeah.
So all of those things, that's doing the work. Nobody wants to ask those questions with the rose-colored glasses on. I mean, we're in love. They are, as you said, JD, the one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can remember a couple in particular that I was counseling, and I could just see they were incompatible for the long run. Because there are just some things that just keep, because of family of origin, there's some things that are just deep-seated in us that's just hard to change.
Yeah.
And by the way, don't ever try to change anybody else. If you think that's going to happen, it's not going to happen.
Just change you.
We call that missionary dating. Yes, go on.
So I was sitting down from this couple, and I could see it coming. They couldn't see it, but I could see it. So I counseled them to, hey, guys, I know you've got the wedding planned. I know you've got all your friends coming, and you've put some money down. But I'm telling you right now, you need to call that off, and you need to do the work, and you're just not ready. And it was hard for them to hear. They went ahead and got married.
Uh-oh.
And they made it about 14 months.
Wow.
And man, did they ever work at it? I mean, they came back and they go, wow, we've got these issues. They just keep coming up. They found themselves in a cycle, right? In this script kind of, it's just like, why do we keep arguing about the same things over and over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
Well, doing the work is finding the truth before the truth finds you.
Mm.
You don't want to find the truth you know, in your marriage. That's the time. So when we're talking about dating, that's the time to do the work and really pay attention, not just let that infatuation kick in. Because, I mean, that's fun. You have that physical attraction and you're having fun together. Mm-hmm. But you can have a lot of fun with somebody that you're not compatible with for life. Mm-hmm. And so do I believe in the one? I do believe that there are people who we are compatible with for life. And then there are people who are good people, but not necessarily the one for us.
So you would say you could make it work with a lot of people.
It's just how much work are you willing to?
Yeah. Do you think people are compatible with more than one person?
Yes, that's what I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question. What about the idea of, well, we love each other, so we have to work at it, even if there are signs that we are not compatible. But
love conquers all.
Love conquers all. Yeah, yeah. I was taught you never give up. And it's like, we've only been dating 2 weeks. And it's like, you know, at what point do you choose to draw the line for the sake of the other person? Like, yeah, I love you, but we're not compatible. Or you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It's just not working.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because... I mean, it's hard because there's not a one size fits all with this either at the same time. So, I mean, you know, is there a willingness to like, okay, we don't have to be the same person. Okay. Right. Like even when we talk about compatibility, that doesn't mean we have to have the same, you know, we both have to be introverts and we both have to be Enneagram, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're both organized. We both like Star Wars movies, you know, that's not necessarily it. I mean, my wife and I are wildly opposite in many areas, but the thing that has helped is that, and where we have always gone back to, and I think where we were willing to keep it going, is that willingness to look at ourselves, that willingness to do the work, and that willingness to, you know, is there that willingness to take those steps? Can I look at my wife and say, even with these differences, even with these questions we have, is she worth it? Because we are willing, we're willing to work together to take those steps toward each other, and then let God's grace be in that weird, messy middle, right? If that's the case, and you can say that, then love can conquer all. If you're like, I don't know, man, you know, but like I said, where it's not a one size fits all is, you know, that's something ultimately that the individual will, you know, if they're willing to go there, I believe that God can show them that. Now, to go back to the idea of the one, I'm with Travis, you know, and I know a lot of people are like, you know, I want there to be the one.
Yeah.
You know, do I think that God can put people in our life to kind of get our attention? Mm-hmm. I think yes. I would say my wife and I, that's exactly our story. But I thought I found the one two or three times before I met Missy, right? And I know for me, I think the idea of the one can really become almost like this unattainable goal or an idol that you can focus on.
To check it's a unicorn. All my boxes.
Yeah, and, it's a unicorn. Yeah, and everything has to be perfect and line up. I mean, and you know, and heck, I'll be honest. I think even in my head, I had this picture of, you know, I will do this. And this is what when I say look like, not necessarily physically, but like, these are their characteristics. Right. This is their history. This is their blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I think for myself, and I think I've heard others say this too, is that while I truly don't believe in the ultimate one concept, at the same time, it wasn't until I was truly able to release that this search for this perfect woman for Ben Davis, and not with like a formula, like, okay, if I get content and if I accept it, then God will provide. Yeah. No, I truly had to come to that concept of like, hey, God, you know what, if it's not now, that's okay, maybe it's not ever, and that's great. Okay. Mm-hmm. And funny thing happens in those moments when your heart gets right, you know, then your car breaks down and the only person with a car at the camp is your future wife. And she takes you to town and you get your car repaired. And
that is your story.
And spend the whole day at the coffee shop and fall in love, you know.
So. I think that's an awesome story. That's really awesome. I mean, I heard it like this. In the Garden of Eden, God had all these trees and fruits you could eat from any of these trees, God said, just not this tree. Don't eat from this tree. I think that is those that are non-Christian, unequally yoked. But from these trees, I planted all this is good. That's the way I heard it said. And I really like it because I think, like you all agree, I don't believe that there's a one. At a certain point in my life, of course I did, you know, and I, like you, Ben, I probably had a list of things and I was like, she's going to snowboard. I mean, everything that I did, she's going to, I wrestled, I did, you know, football, like, you know, I was young. And so like all the sports I did, I was like, do I really want somebody who's going to wrestle and, you know, do everything I'm doing? She's going to beat me up. Like,
are you in the air playing like football?
Yeah. And my wife, you know, she's, you know, we agree on everything. I'm wrong. She's right. You know, and that's kind of the way that, no, I'm just kidding. But, Careful. I think, yeah, I know, I'm sweating over here a little bit. But I think that there can be, I mean, man, it can cause you a lot of stress if you think there's one. Mm-hmm. It just can, because mm-hmm. you're looking for perfection is really what you're looking for. When you say the one, it's somebody perfect, but it's for all the things that you like. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, that's a unicorn. You're never going to find somebody that's absolutely perfect, that hits mm-hmm. everything, that makes you feel great. Because really, finding the one is all about you, right? Somebody like to what you were saying, Ben, is like, they make me feel great. Mm-hmm. They have all the same passions. They want to watch football every Thursday night, every Monday night. They're watching all the UFC fights. They like the same coffee I like.
So you want a bro.
Exactly. Bro. These are some of the things I had to work through, right? So this is just me being real. I had to work through all that stuff, yeah. You know, and that's okay. You really don't want somebody that's exactly like you. I mean, honestly, you don't. You think you do, but you don't.
No, yeah.
And I think when you, the fun part of not having someone exactly like you is how you grow. They like challenge you in different ways. And
learn
then
new things.
You're then going back to leaning on the Lord. And you're like, okay, this person's really different in this situation, but what can I learn from it? What can I take away from it?
I think opposites attract, and opposites are a lot of fun. And there are obviously areas in your life that you want someone to be a little bit opposite of you. Mm-hmm. But that's why it's important to kind of have some help along the way, mm-hmm. because how do you know which things are like deal breakers,
right,
or which one is going to end up being a lot of fun in your relationship? Mm-hmm. You know, for example, like how are you going to parent your children, or maybe your spiritual heritage? Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's another big one. So if one you know, grew up in church and that's really important to them, and the other one didn't, and they have different views on that, well, that's going to be one of those things that you're going to have to work mm-hmm. through and deal with, that you probably want to talk about before. So just having someone say, you know mm-hmm. what, that's personality. It's okay to be opposite in that area.
Yeah.
Okay, this here, you need to pay attention. You need to be on the same page mm-hmm. here. And I think that's going back to what Ben said, doing the work and having someone walk alongside of you. I would recommend premarital counseling for anybody
100%.
Considering mm-hmm. yeah. marriage. Please, please, please.
What? I mean, that is it. I mean, doing the work, having premarital counseling before marriage, I mean, that helps with finding out the abuses we were talking about, the boundaries, if the boundaries aren't right. I mean, that helps a lot of people. So mm-hmm. right now, if you guys are dating, you're listening, you're like, you know what? They're not toxic things, but there are some things, you know, we do need to work mm-hmm. on before we get married. Or there are some toxic things and, you know, I need to get out, or get some wisdom on, do I need to get out? Mm-hmm. And so, listen, I just want to say thank you for everybody listening in for this episode on dating. I know this was a heavier topic. I just want to say real quick, one more time, if you have, you know, crossed some of those boundaries, let me just let you know, your identity is rooted in Christ. You are forgiven. If you turn your life and you're focused on God and you're not doing those things anymore, then you are fully forgiven. You don't need to feel like a second-class Christian. You are fully loved by God. And so I just want to just remind you of that. I just want to say thank you for everybody that has been dropping comments, that have been sharing, that has subscribed already. Please continue to tell people about Moment by Moment. Man, we love getting that feedback. We love you guys, and we hope to see you all next week. We drop episodes every Monday. We'll see you guys next week.
Please like and review Moment by Moment wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love for you to share this episode with your friends and family. And don't forget to subscribe to be notified every time a new episode releases. Be sure to tune in next week as new episodes release every Monday.